If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Here's your host, John Halpin.
Hey, everybody. It's John Halpin. Welcome to the Friday, October 27th edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Derek Van Riper and I are here again Friday afternoon. We're recording about 4:30 Eastern. We're going to talk about news, notes, injuries, all that. Quick review of last night, Derek. Are we now on the Alex Collins bandwagon, firmly, officially?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the context would be, how good is he going to be if he's not scoring touchdowns? Like, is he going to be dependent upon the Ravens not getting beat? And I trust them at home, but I don't really trust them at all on the road. And whether it's Flacco or Mallett going forward, it just doesn't make a difference anymore. Right. I mean, Flacco was playing pretty well before he took that hit from Kiko Alonso, but he's still pacing out for like 204 yards. And that's about as good as it's going to get from their passing game right now. So with Alex Collins, it's like, great. Like, they have to have this game script where they're winning to get both he and Terrence West mid double digit carries. If they only run the ball 20 times as a team, what do they get? 10 each?
Well, Terrence West is going to be, I mean, forget that though. When Terrence West gets back at this point, don't they go, you know, hey, Terrence, thanks a lot. Why don't you sit over here until the other guy gets hurt needs a break?
I hope that's where they're at. I guess last night it was Buck Allen instead, but,
right. But he catches passes too. Right. I get it. Yeah. But I don't know. Terrence West is certainly he's the odd man out.
Probably. But yeah, like they seem content to split the role between Collins and Allen right now too. So it can get worse with the third guy coming back potentially. And I love that he's getting 6 yards a carry. I just want him to score. Why can't he score?
I know. And they gave the ball to Allen late at the 1 yard line and he fumbled into the end zone and they got a touchdown out of it. I thought they were giving it to him another time and he got stopped. I'm not sure about that one, though. I was watching some of it. Thing with Collins here, 7 games, only one of them has he been under 4.6 per carry. And the thing is, a few weeks ago, he had the short leash because of the fumbles, because Harbaugh was basically saying, you know, he fumbles one more time, he's going to sit. But now we're 4 weeks past that now. So his leash has gotten progressively longer. 32% owned on Yahoo. And get this, weeks 15, 16, at Cleveland, and home for Indy.
So maybe that's where the appeal is. Mm-hmm. You know, you can keep him around, play him when you have to, and then get excited about him as your RB2 as your flex in the fantasy semifinals and championship week if you make it there.
Yeah. Tony Romo was a little bit excited about Alec Collins last night, by the way. Holy moly. He was called, that's what we're going to call it, the Irish Dancer. We're going to call him the Irish Dancer. It was just great.
That is almost as bad as Muscle Hamster.
It was excellent. Look at this guy. It's great. And did you see the part where the cat was on the field?
I saw the clips of it. Yeah. I tried to watch as little of that game as possible. I'm not gonna pretend like I was excited about that game last night.
I wasn't either. I was watching when Flacco almost got decapitated. That wasn't good.
So a hit like that is just like the science of football. Like I don't really know what people want Kiko Alonso to do in that situation. Like people thought that was a dirty hit. It was vicious. It was bad.
Yeah.
I don't want to see guys having their helmets fly off, suffering brain injuries and walking off the field bloody. But what did Kiko Alonso actually do wrong? Like he started to make that tackle as Flacco went into his slide. There's not enough time.
I didn't know if he could have held up. I thought he could have, but you're not the only one I've heard take that, have that perspective today.
I have no rooting interest in either team or anything like that. It doesn't really impact me at all. I don't know. I think there are certain plays that happen on a football field that are just going to be extremely violent no matter what you do, no matter what precautionary steps you take to protect players. Bad things are still going to happen to players sometimes based on how football works.
Right. All right. Well, Ravens fans, you can send your hate tweets to at Derek Van Riper. Don't send them to me. I'm at JHalpin37. You can also catch us at RotoWire and get the news feed at RotoWire NFL. And we're on Facebook. Lots of Facebook Q&As over the course of the week, including Tim Heaney at noon Eastern on Sunday. Let's get into some of the news. Bye weeks. We got six byes: Cardinals, Packers, Jags, Rams, Giants, Titans. Not a lot of quarterbacks. We're not hurting on quarterbacks here. We're hurting on Aaron Rodgers already. Otherwise, the worst quarterback now playing is Marcus Mariota. So that's not too bad.
Yeah, I think the problem with the bye weeks this week is it's seen more at the other positions, but I think it's because it's a smaller slate with three fewer games and a lot of matchups that you look at and you kind of just see a clear difference between the teams that are matching up. Not gaudy lines, but, you know, I don't know. Things just kind of fell in a way, like Saints-Bears, right? Half of that game looks kind of useless. Like you don't look at the Bears as a team that even when they have to throw, that they're going to go in there and throw it effectively
right
against the Saints. So that's kind of a lost team. San Francisco going up against Philly. It's the same kind of thing. It's like, all right, well, ordinarily going up against a team that can score a lot, maybe you get garbage time. You don't really trust them to get their garbage time. And it kind of breaks that way in a lot of different parts of the slate. Sunday morning game, early game in London, the Vikings Browns, you know, you want to pick on the Browns defense, but in the main DFS slates, you can't because that game's not included. So it's just a few wrinkles like that, that when you add them all together, it makes this kind of a goofy slate from especially a DFS perspective, a little bit from season long, but really more so from DFS.
Yeah, it is a goofy slate. I mean, I'm looking at my rankings at running back. I'll give you, okay, so 24, we basically say, you know, 24 is the end of your, you know, most people, the average league is 12 teams, so 24 is the end of your RB2s. RB24 is Matt Forte for me. Wide receiver 24 is Marvin Jones. So that's a goofy week.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I feel a lot better about Marvin Jones than Matt Forte by comparison. But yeah, I mean, the highest scoring teams based on the implied totals, the Eagles at 29.5, the Saints at 28.25, the Patriots at 27.75, and then the Bengals and Cowboys are the other two teams above 26.
Yeah.
It's not a terrible week, but just it's teams that you wouldn't expect. And in that Bengals game, you might like a lot of players in there, but how do you decide which ones to hone in on behind AJ Green? Like if he doesn't do it all himself, is it Croft? Is it one of the other running backs behind Joe Mixon? Is it even Mixon at all? Like I think finding secondary value with the Bengals is tricky. Finding secondary value with the Cowboys is tricky as one of the higher scoring teams. it's a little tough with Seattle right now too, because their backfield is such a mess and they're implied to put up 25 and change. I mean, that puts them sixth on the slate. So we should have a lot of interest in the Seahawks, but where the heck are they going to score 25 plus points?
Right. I know that's not that that's unusual. Certainly. I also, what was the other one I was going to look? Actually, you're talking about the Bengals. So do you think Mixon, is it a squeaky wheel gets more work, or do you think his coaches are mad at him, or do you just think it's more of the same?
I hope Marvin Lewis is the kind of person that when something needs a little WD-40, he just gets the can out and takes care of it. But if the hinges in Marvin Lewis's house are all like really loud and squeaky every time he opens a door, Joe Mixon is screwed. Like the comments he made this week, we had an audio clip from Marvin Lewis on the XM show, and it was so vague. It was like, oh, well, he had a good week of practice and he got hit a little bit. And I thought, it's week 8. Like, he's been the starter, it seems like, for the last 4 weeks, got the starter's workload in 3 of those 4 games and then just tailed off last week for some reason. He just made it sound like things were still kind of in the preseason training camp mode for Mixon.
Right.
I don't know if that was just the way he was talking to the media or what that was. It just left me with this weird feeling that Mixon, for as great as this matchup is and for as much volume as he's getting the 3 games before the 7 carry dud last week against the Steelers, I'm gun shy about having too many shares of him in DFS, even though I like him. He went from a guy that I wanted to have in every lineup on every site as I started to build my primary lineups to a guy that I wanted like one, maybe 2 places at most.
Okay. Speaking of lineups, we're in on Fanball this week again. Everybody, fanball.com/RotoWire. If you beat Derek, me, Tim Heaney, and Vlad Sadler, it hit a $5 double up. You get an extra $5. Now, the kicker last week was that Vlad finished 4th out of 114, so only the 3 people who beat him got the extra 5, which was a pretty, playing against that guy. I mean, I brought up the rear after talking trash to Heaney, so that was not good. But I'm ready. See, the thing is, I look at this lineup, the Fanball pricing, I'm still getting used to the Fanball pricing, and I'm looking at it going, wow, my lineup's awesome. But
is your tendency with the Fanball pricing to pay up more at running back or receiver or quarterback? Is there any one position you find week to week where you're a little more aggressive in allocating a bigger chunk of your budget?
I think it's running back. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I have Le'Veon, McCoy, and I actually have Antonio. I know it's a double up on Steelers, but I have 2 of them.
Okay, because my first draft, similar, no Antonio Brown for me. It was Le'Veon and Zeke at 8,700, 8,500, and then McCoy as the flex. It left me with light receivers, I guess. But I felt like there were plenty of cheaper receivers with matchups I like to go ahead and kind of take that chance.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I am getting used to that. But anyway, fanball.com/RotoWire. Come on in and play us. Double up, $5 double up. And if you beat all 4 of us, and Vlad's the hard one to beat. But if you beat all 4 of us, you get so you win 10 instead of 5. That's a pretty good deal. So check it out. All right, let's get into injuries. The Bucks, all the Bucks corners, all of them, everybody. I think Rondae Barber's playing for the Bucks. Kenny Galladay's out. Miles Garrett's out for the Browns. Now, I thought the Browns might be able to keep that close. That's a killer. And they've got Jason McCourty doubtful. Is that going to be a Sunday morning snooze fest that's going to be 27-3?
Yeah, go out for chilaquiles. Don't worry about that game.
Yeah, that's too bad. I actually thought they were going to make it a game. I keep rooting for the Browns to win. But oh well. All right. So those Bucks corners I mentioned, that's got Panthers offense written all over it right there. Funchess and Benjamin are in a sweet spot.
Yeah, so I think the implied total is too low on the Panthers because the Bucks have had trouble anyway.
Yeah.
And you take pieces away, it makes things even harder for them. We know Cam's been up and down. You watch the Panthers very closely. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess are both pretty interesting. It's kind of a skinny tree right now, the Panthers in the passing game. They haven't run it particularly well. So maybe McCaffrey gets his in the passing game again. But you could see Cam having one of those GPP winning type performances this week. Even if those two starting corners were out there, with both of them out, I mean, that could be open season for those wideouts.
Yeah, it's a nightmare for the nightmare scenario for the Bucs there. I think it could be a shootout. Oh, I see. The thing is, the Panthers defense has been playing well, but I still think I see a shootout there somehow. Like because of the injuries, it looks like it should be easy. But the Panthers are also, they're still hurting on the line, and Khalil, it looks like Keekly's going to play. Ryan Khalil's probably not. So I don't know. I think some people around here are getting a little too excited. Stephon Diggs sounds like he's going to play Sunday morning. Do you roll with the guy like Diggs first game back, considering where, I mean, he practiced all week. Are you ready to roll? If you have him, are you excited? Or are you kind of like, I don't know. I wish I didn't have to start him right away.
After a 2-week layoff and having the bye in week 9, I don't think they would fly him to London if they weren't pretty confident that he's healed.
To play the Browns,
a team they could beat without him.
Right.
So if he's active, I'm playing him. I mean, I just think it's, maybe I'm going too far. Maybe I'm thinking it through more than Mike Zimmer has thought it through. Maybe the extra week off plus the bye, going 4 straight weeks without playing, would be the best long-term call. But that's a big road trip to bring a guy back for.
Right.
So yeah, if he's active, I feel okay about it. I mean, I'd put him probably top 30, top 35 at the wide receiver position this week, given the possibility they get up big, they're running the ball a lot, given the possibility they ease him back in if he is active. But the Browns are so much weaker against the pass than they are against the run anyway.
Yep.
All it takes for Diggs or Thielen or Rudolph to make value is just that one big play. And we know Diggs is one of the guys that when they throw downfield, he's the guy they throw to.
That's right. Other questionables or game time decisions. It sounds like Josh Norman's going to go, which is good for the Skins. Not great for Dez Bryant. Sounds like Golden Tate's going to go for the Lions, which is great, which is a little bit earlier than expected. And the other one for the Panthers, Graham Gano is questionable for the Panthers. So you know what the story is here, the story of the weekend.
Oh, yeah, Roberto Aguayo.
The Roberto Aguayo revenge game. How could you not be excited for that?
I mean, if you're the Bucs, I mean, his former teammates were all over him when they let him go. Like he was brutal. And Bucs fans, I mean, you want to get mad as a Bucs fan, think about where they drafted Roberto Aguayo.
And they traded up for him.
Yeah. Traded up where they drafted him and then what they got from him.
Brutal.
Not good.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, he's on the Panthers practice squad. If Gano can't go, Aguayo will kick. So if you're in league with kickers and you have Graham Gano, be careful. Make sure he's active.
I hate that.
I know.
I'm not like full Jake Seeley about it with the get rid of the kickers thing.
I am.
But I do think when you have to shuffle your roster last minute because of a kicker injury, that's probably one of the worst, most annoying, frustrating things you have to do as a fantasy player. So, like, I get really annoyed by that.
But what I would do, because I'm late, because I hate kickers and I basically feel like no matter what I do, I have no idea what the kicker's going to do. If I had Graham Gano right now, I wouldn't wait till Sunday morning. I would just cut him and get another kicker right now, just so I didn't have to think about it on Sunday. And it's lazy, but I just like, I don't know. Maybe the kicker I pick up could get 3 field goals. How the heck do I know?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't want to sweat it. I mean, if the possibility is like a kicker can have a setback, like that does happen.
Yeah.
Every once in a while they strain something in warmups or even on a kickoff play or something like that. And then you're screwed. You're taking a donut.
Brutal. The last guy I want to mention, John Ross for the Bengals. He is off the injury report, so might play. I don't think he would be your playing against Indy. He would be your DFS tournament guy, right? He would be your home run hitter jackpot play. Who's probably, I don't have it in front of me. He's probably very cheap.
Yeah, I think so. That's your under 1% and very cheap. And doesn't need a lot of targets. What could go right? GPP call. Like that's about where he is. So that is not an endorsement. That is a, hey, this guy's really fast. He's going up against really bad defense. You never know.
He's the poor man's Deshaun Watson. That's what he is. Deshaun Jackson. Sorry. Speaking of Deshaun Watson, he's one of the guys I want to watch this weekend because people. I feel like he's been the subject of a lot of start sit questions that I've seen this week because he's playing at Seattle. And I think this is where we find out if Deshaun Watson is essentially matchup proof for fantasy football, for season long fantasy football, because the running ability, no matter how good the Seattle pass defense can be, the running skills just, you know, they kind of override that if they're good enough, right? I mean, I am not talking people out of Deshaun Watson this week. Are you?
No, I haven't had a ton of quarterback lineup questions yet, so maybe I'll get lucky and several more will come in before kickoff on Sunday. But going back to the week 3 game, I think that's about the time people started to say, hey, this guy is really good. You know, the 300 yards and the 2 TDs, 41 rushing yards against the Patriots. I remember going into week 4 talking to you, I think on that Monday, and saying they have 3 in a row at home. They have Tennessee, they have Kansas City, and they have Cleveland. That is a great stretch. And he went more than just, you know, making the layup from a matchup standpoint. He crushed it. I mean, he had 12 passing TDs and 1 rushing score during that span of those home games. But things are going to be much more difficult for him as we move through the second half of the season. The week 8 road trip this week to Seattle, week 10 against the Rams on the road, I think is a pretty decent test too. He gets Baltimore in week 12 at Baltimore. He gets Jacksonville in week 15 in Duval. I mean, so there's going to be a series of difficult decisions that Deshaun Watson owners have to make even after this week. And I think you're right. If he comes in and holds his own and plays well, then people are going to have a ton of confidence rolling into those tougher matchups later. But if he falls on his face, they're going to have to go through the same process. And I say they, because I don't have him anywhere. Same process of trying to decide whether or not you trust him more than your alternative in those matchups that I mentioned.
Okay. Another guy I want to watch this week is what happens with Amari Cooper? Because last week he was on a lot of benches and he blew up and he got targeted 19 times, which is insane. And you could argue, you could look at it and say, all right, they finally made the decision. They're just going to get this guy the ball. They're going to feed him. They're going into a hostile environment, you know, a tough defense on the road, traveling across the country. If you have Amari Cooper, you're certainly playing him. But if Amari Cooper comes out of this game with a 2 for 19, what the hell do you do?
Yeah, you probably end up back in that same position you were in going into week 7, where you're kind of just like, I don't get it. Why is this guy so bad? The Buffalo corners have been better than I expected overall this year. And the matchup you worry about the most for them is going to be, you know, the bigger 6'3", 6'4", type number one receivers. And Cooper's not quite that big. He's, you know, even 6 feet. So physically, he's not as much of a mismatch for Buffalo's secondary as some of the other number one receivers they could come across. I am looking at that game as one where, you know, there's no rain in the forecast. It's supposed to be cold, but not too windy. And there's a lot of rain league-wide. So passing numbers around the league throughout most of the Northeast could take a hit this week, depending on how heavy that rain really is. With that, I kind of like the Raiders as one of the handful of road teams that could exceed expectations this week. The Bills have 9 picks. They've done a great job forcing turnovers. They've held opposing teams to just 5 passing scores so far, but yardage wise, they're pretty close to average. 7 yards per attempt, 258 yards per game. So I think a good passing attack, and that's what the Raiders are to me, they're a good passing attack, can break them down and can do well. And I think the thing that I like about this game for the Raiders is that their defense has been struggling. They're giving up 8.2 yards per attempt themselves, 10 passing TDs, no picks. Opposing passers have a 109 passer rating against the Raiders. Mm-hmm. So this could be a shootout, kind of like the Bucks-Bills game last week. And I think that bodes extremely well for both Cooper, but also Michael Crabtree in a week where the Raiders, you know, if they can't run it effectively with Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington, they're going to have to rely more heavily on Carr. And Carr showed us last week in that Thursday game against the Chiefs, he seems to be close to 100% healthy. Or maybe even is 100% now, but he looked more like Derek Carr in his second game back than he did in that first one.
Which running back? Which one do you go with?
I think my gut call, and that's all it can be based on the way these two guys seem so interchangeable, is Richard. You know, I think it's because he's shown us a few bursts over the last season and a half, almost 6 yards per carry last year, 4.5 yards per carry this season. You know, that sort of top end speed that he brings, it's not like Washington is slow. He's not. Like, it's just, I think it's because I've seen the big plays from Richard at times that I didn't expect it. I feel a little more optimistic about him, but there's so little that separates those two players. I mean, 7 carries of 20 or more yards last year for DeAndre Washington on 87 attempts. That's incredible.
Yep. So, yeah, my gut's the other way. So good luck, everybody. My gut's
I wish I had a good reason. Like, Richard has 6 carries at 20 or more yards. Washington has 7. So they've both made some big plays. I think Richard's had some 40 yarders. That's what I'm talking about. Those extra, extra long plays, they just stick with you. Even if they shouldn't, they do. So I could see them splitting snaps and touches right down the middle. Yeah. And I honestly don't know if there's even any particular reason to think that one is clearly better than the other as like a goal line back or as a pass catcher. They seem very similar in skill set.
I have Washington at RB 23 and Richard at RB 26. So yeah,
there you go.
I'm with you. All right. You think Tyreek Hill gets his normal production, gets his work done against the Broncos secondary?
Played really well against them about a year ago, right? That Sunday night game against Denver when yes. Andy Reid had kind of schemed up some special plays for him. I just think when we're talking about the small, fast receivers like Hill, it makes things more difficult for the big physical corners. Right. And that's how Denver wants to play. And I just think that's almost a mismatch for Denver's defense in a lot of ways. So I feel pretty good about Hill. I mean, do you have any leagues at all where you can actually sit him down because you have good enough depth?
No. And I'm with you. I wouldn't. And even in this case, because he's a different kind of guy, like you said, especially, you know, matched up against the big corners is an interesting thing. And it's not I think he's such not a typical receiver that the matchup stuff doesn't scare me as much. Maybe that's not explained very well.
Well, no, like Tyreek Hill, I worry about Amari Cooper against Denver because he's a prototypical wide receiver. Tyreek Hill is not a prototypical receiver.
Right. So, yeah, I'm rolling with him. The other guy I want is Deion Lewis. I want to see if this is – I mean, last week it looked like it was for real because it was the second week in a row where he got a decent workload. The only weird thing – because last 2 weeks he's got 11 and 13 carries. The weird thing there – two things. One, he's not catching any passes, which we thought was a skill set of his, and it was, and now they're just not doing it with him anymore because they want to throw to White instead. And the second thing is the snap count the last 2 weeks, 29 and 26. That's just a crowded place. I mean, you look at that team and you think, you know, if a guy in a backfield has a chance of scoring a touchdown, the Patriots are a pretty good place to do it. But Gillislee might do it, but he only had, 13 snaps last week or something? White was on the field for around the same as Lewis. Burkhead was back a little bit. And it's like, you know, how your margin for error is small if you're on the field for 26 snaps.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if that backfield's a pizza, it's one pizza for 4 players, which is obnoxious. Belichick should just buy a second pizza and run the ball more. It's like half the pizza goes to Lewis. The other half gets split into varying size pieces between Gillislee, White, and now Burkhead.
Right.
So, and that's a team that it's like a 12-inch pizza instead of the prop 20-inch giant pizza that you want, like the New York-style pizza. So it's really a... It's kind of a mess. I mean, I think with Lewis, 15 touches any given week is kind of the high end of what you can get. He's getting red zone carries.
Yep.
That's the tricky thing with him that I didn't see coming. I thought he'd catch a few more passes, but really not get a lot of chances inside the 20. He's had a carry inside the 5 in each of the last 2 games, a total of 7 carries inside the red zone going back through week 4.
Yep. I'm trying to think of what else here.
The Chargers are not good against the run either. So I wonder, I just wonder how much Belichick will adjust the game plan for that. Will this be the week where he orders the second pizza for his backfield?
And what about those weird Ohio pizzas that are rectangular and they cut in 94 slices? What's that?
Yeah. Oh, is that even, that's even worse than the St. Louis pizzas, which are round and cut into tiny little pieces that are smaller than the palm of your hand.
What's the famous place with the weird, with the fake cheese? Emo's?
Emo's. In St. Louis?
Yeah.
Emo's with an I, yeah. I think that's the one.
All right. But it's some weird, I don't even know what it is. It's some, it sounds like provolone, but it's the name. Someone's going to tell me on Twitter what the name of the cheese is. Because I'll look it up later, because now I'm curious. Because I had someone swear to me it was the greatest pizza ever, and then you get other people on social media going, oh my God, this is ridiculously bad, and I don't know what to make of it. I've never had it, so.
Is this a chain? This doesn't, I mean, it looks okay.
I think it's a local chain there.
All right. Well, it looks super thin. Like a really good thin pizza is good.
The cheese is called Provel, right? That's what it is.
Provel. So it's like a provolone hybrid of some kind.
Hang on. Provel cheese. Popular. It's a white processed cheese, particularly popular in St. Louis cuisine. That's a combination of cheddar, Swiss, and provolone. Thank you, Wikipedia, for that. It's good stuff.
We should all donate $3 to Wikipedia right now, because that just enriched our lives.
Oh my good heavens. So yeah, if hey anybody's got, again, Twitter at Derek Van Riper, at JHelpin37, I want to hear, tell us about Emo's pizza. Tell us what you think, and about Provel cheese, because this is fascinating to me. This
right
hybrid processed cheese.
Well, if Emo's is like a joke, like if it's just the regional chain or local chain that's outdone by local places, tell us which local place to go to, because that's what I will do once I make it to St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to St. Louis since 1994, but maybe I'll be back sometime and go have some pizza. I did go to dinner in the Italian. Was it the Hill? Is the Italian area? It's good. Listen, I like St. Louis. I had a good time. And the casino, it has casino gambling boats, so I was happy.
Oh yeah, the river boats.
Yes, they're great. All right.
Anything you can do on a boat that you could also do on land totally makes sense.
Totally makes sense. Absolutely. All right. Who do you want to see this weekend? Who are you curious about?
Oh, let's see. What's on my to watch list for week 8? Well, I want to see if Andy Dalton can make a layup against the Colts, because if he can't do that, then that's it. I want to see if Steve Sarkisian starts to call plays like a man who's going to be fired if he doesn't throw the ball more to Julio Jones. He started to do it, of course, against the Patriots. If Jones didn't score in the fourth quarter, though, I can't get over this. That would have been a disappointing game.
Yep.
He scored late when the game was already out of hand. So that's kind of high on my priority list. Like, what are they really doing with Julio, with that offense? Can the Bears throw more than 7 times? I don't want to watch it. I just want to know if it happens. So I guess that's not really on the what do I want to see. Raiders-Bills comes up really high. What do the Raiders do with those? Yeah, because I think that game can be fun. I want to see what the Raiders do in the absence of Lynch. If one of those guys looks so good, does he kind of take on a timeshare role in future weeks? I mean, Lynch has been up and down. At times he looks like himself. Other times he looks like a guy that took a year off and has had accumulated a lot of wear and tear on his body. Can they carve out a role? Can one of those two backs carve out a role once Lynch is back, if one of them plays very well against Buffalo? That's pretty interesting to me. Can Phillip Rivers do something against that Patriots defense, or did the Patriots start to fix their defense with that performance against the Falcons? I think the more we watch the Falcons, the story is probably more about what they cannot do and less about what their opponent has done right to stop them at this point. So, you know, the Falcons-Jets game could be closer than we expect. I don't want to watch that game at all. Like, no. The Falcons, as fun as they were last year, I'm kind of avoiding them right now. You mentioned Deshaun Watson earlier. What is he going to do against a really good defense on the road in a hostile environment after that stretch of 3 road games where there were 2 pretty easy matchups cooked in there? Does he show us that he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks in this league or something close to it by going in there and kind of setting the tone for the rest of the second half with, he's got a smattering of other easy matchups mixed in. But as I said, that road schedule, it's going to be really tough for him. Juju Smith-Schuster, is the hype warranted? Is he going to take on the 2 or 3 targets they would have given to Martavis Bryant?
He found his
bike. Really wow us with that.
Other than that, what do we care about football? He found his bike.
Oh, yeah, he got his bike back. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster is not even old enough to drive yet, is he?
He's 20.
He's very young.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned those Raiders running backs. We talk about our fishbowl lineups every week. I have Washington and Rashard. So I keep hoping this is what I've been waiting for. The Lynch, somehow the Lynch, not meltdown, but the disappearance. Somehow it's like someone whacks Marshawn Lynch for me in some way. So one of these guys, so I figure out which one is the guy. I wound up drafting both of them, figuring that one of them was going to pan out in the second half of the season.
Right on.
So let's hope. Any weird ones? Mine are the same as last week. My weird ones in this league, I usually ask you, name an unusual guy in one of your lineups. I mean, I have Croft, Curse, and Sanu in there again. I picked up Deontay Thompson, and I was thinking about throwing him in there.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting last week. The Bills passing game is one that long-term you don't want to trust, but I think you can throw against the Raiders. Teams have been able to do it so far this year. The weird player I would have to use, depending on where things are trending with Emmanuel Sanders, and I don't think as of Friday it doesn't look good, I may have to play Mike Tolbert in the fishbowl.
Wow. That's terrible.
Well, actually, I can play Travis Benjamin. I guess I'm trying not to get too excited about a couple big plays from last week. I guess maybe you throw the dart at Benjamin because he's got a little more big playability than Mike Tolbert.
Right. Yeah.
Slightly more.
I think you're right. Mike Tolbert. Now watch Mike Tolbert get a touchdown. All right. So I have a question for you, a lineup question there. I have three quarterbacks in that league. We start two. Wentz, Dalton, Alex Smith.
I would be sitting Alex Smith against the Broncos.
That's kind of where I was going to. So, all right, thanks. I'm glad we got my advice out of the way. All right, everybody, buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long, whether you're planning a day out with friends, searching for a last-minute deal, or buying a gift for a loved one. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the year, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's so easy to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few taps. I can find seats. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals and to get you the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And it doesn't end with sports. SeatGeek also has plenty of concert, comedy, and theater tickets available too. But back to sports. What's up with the Bucks? We were talking last time about Bucks Hornets and going to Bucks games. What's with the court? It looks really good.
That was the Mecca they played at last night. The old stadium.
Why did they play there?
It's a throwback thing that they were doing.
All right.
They're tearing down the Bradley Center, I think, after this year. They're just moving to the new stadium. I don't, maybe they're turning the Bradley Center into a skate park or something. I don't know, but it needs to be replaced, by the way. The Bradley Center is, of the stadiums I've been to, the stadiums and arenas I've been to, it is the most industrial, boring, garbage venue. There's no character at all. I thought Progressive Field was kind of like the worst ballpark I'd been to. The BMO Harris Bradley Center is worse than Progressive Field in Cleveland for a game day environment. And I think
Progressive Field's the worst stadium you've been to.
Yeah. I mean,
wow.
I went right before the Indians started to get good again.
Yeah.
I saw one of Carlos Carrasco's last bad starts like three summers ago. And I'm sure the last couple of years, the atmosphere has been way better.
Right.
But I was there for like a Saturday 4 o'clock game against the Tigers and realized this, though. I had just been to PNC 2 days ago.
Ah.
And in 2 days before that, I saw Homer Bailey throw a no hitter in Cincinnati. So it was the timing was not great for the park compared to the other two I'd been to and what had happened at those parks while I was there. So that may have skewed the perception a bit. I'm not trying to trash Cleveland because people do that all the time. And look, I'm from the Milwaukee area. People can rip Milwaukee all they want, and I'm not going to be personally offended by it. But the Bucks' new arena will be a significant improvement nonetheless. And I think the Mecca thing, the team was awesome back then for a while, so they want to kind of get back into the roots of the franchise for a bit.
So you're lucky you never went to the Vet or to Shea Stadium. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, did you ever go to Milwaukee County Stadium before the Brewers had Miller Park?
No, I've been to Miller Park a few times, but I have not been to County. I never went to County Stadium.
So Miller Park's obviously nice, one of the modern parks and everything. They've done a nice job maintaining it. But County Stadium was a dump. Like I think County Stadium and Shea were probably built around the same time and probably had a lot of the same qualities, if you will. So, I didn't go to Shea, but I think I may have experienced something similar before Miller Park.
Got it. And I like, you're right, I like Miller Park. I had a, you know, nice time the times I've been there. Food was good. I like, you know, it's like, it's the fish out of water thing. Like for you, you know, going to eat abroad at Miller Park is probably not a big deal. And I thought it was really cool. So,
that's just a Tuesday for me, but yeah, no, I mean, I know it's unique though. The more I've gone to other parks, you're like, oh, where's the big parking lot where everyone's grilling out? And people are like, the parking structures that are there, you can't have fire in there. buy sausage inside.
Exactly. All right. Anyway, new users at SeatGeek can get $20 off their first purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and a promo code ROTONFL today. That's promo code ROTONFL for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. See you live with SeatGeek, right seat, right now, right from your phone. Thanks, SeatGeek. All right. Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love?
By that, I think the real question is, who's in your lineup? Who do you have in your DFS lineups this week? Nelson Aguilar is a guy I like on both FanBall and FanDuel. 4,900 on FanBall. I think he's 6,000 flat on FanDuel. You know, the Eagles are the highest projected scoring team of the week. The Niners have been so generous to receivers throughout this season. Even if you like Alshon Jeffrey too, which I like the idea of having one, not both. Aguilar is just one of those guys that frees up some of the extra cash you would want. So he's in my fan ball lineup where I've got the three running backs that I paid up for. And I feel good about that. I think he's kind of a top 12, top 15 wide receiver this week, potentially with six teams off. I mean, that just bumps everybody up quite a bit.
See, I think I had this conversation with Tim that I'm looking at this I'm not looking at it as a trap. Right. But short week, some bad injuries for the Eagles. I think it just might be tougher than we think because they're playing so well. And your temptation is to look at this game and think they're just going to cruise. But it's there's some obstacles to overcome and they're not just mental. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think. What it could be, though, is it could just be a lower scoring game than people are expecting where the Eagles still win. But instead of winning 28-10, they win like 17-10 or something like that, where the defense plays pretty well and they have to grind it out a little longer. I can see that. I haven't built a lineup with Carson Wentz in it yet. And I like Carson Wentz a lot. I think the drawback of it is we could see the two running backs get involved. We could see a lot of LeGarrette Blount and Wendell Smallwood if they open up a big lead. So there's a few ways that the game script can go south. Maybe they are overlooking it a little bit. I've been on this all year, though. I think the Eagles are looking more and more like a team that can make a deep run in the playoffs.
Yep, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I hope for them. I was going to say, I hope for them that the injuries don't derail them from that. But as a Giants fan, I don't really want a lot good to happen to the Eagles. So, you know. That is what it is. I do like Wentz, though. I love Breeze in this spot against the Bears at home. The Bears have been different on the road. I know they played well that day in Baltimore, but that was a goofy game. But I just think the Saints are going to – I really like – because you can't – they're going to have to let Trubisky do something. You know, if they're down a little bit, and I just think that, and I think the Saints are going to wind up having the ball locked because I think Trubisky might get himself in trouble. Breeze is my top quarterback for the week.
I do like the Breeze call. I've got Ingram going too.
Yes.
As a guy where if I'm not maybe in a lineup where I'm not using Breeze, Ingram is one of the running backs that I want to go after if I'm not paying up for at least one of those top options. I mean, the opportunities for him to score should be there. Not hard to see a path where the Saints put four TDs on the board. Yeah, they do that. Maybe Breeze gets three, but one could be Ingram on the ground. Maybe he catches a TD pass. I mean, he's got that ability too. I think he's very fairly priced on a bunch of sites. So the Ingram exposure is definitely there. I mentioned the Bengals. You know, I'm really interested to see what they do with Mixon. AJ Green, of the expensive receivers, is the one I like the most. I mean, the Colts have been horrible this year against the pass. Even if Andy Dalton is just okay, not great, AJ Green should get his. And you look at what they've allowed, 8.9 yards per attempt. They've allowed 40 pass plays of 20 or more yards this season. The next closest team has only allowed 30. That is staggering. The big plays they give up are just amazing.
Yep. They're very bad.
We talked about Cam. We talked about the Panthers with the Bucks corners. So Cam looks to be in line for a nice day. Latavius Murray, the workload's there, right? I know you said we talked about the Browns haven't been better against the run in the pass. Garrett's not there. This could be the game script anyway could go Latavius Murray's way.
You've kind of got the Admiral Akbar feeling about the Eagles matching up against the Niners. I kind of have it about Latavius Murray against the Browns. Like, I think we all know what Latavius Murray really is. And I know we all saw that highlight where he looked really explosive last week and scored. I don't want to be poisoned by what I saw on that one play last week. I don't want to fall into that trap. So I would take the enthusiasm with Murray. And for me, I'm pushing it more at Jerick McKinnon.
Okay. I really like the Star Wars reference, by the way. That was good. So, nice job.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
I know. That's great stuff. CJ Anderson against the Chiefs. Could you? Would you like to? I guess is what I want to ask.
I think I've mentioned CJ Anderson at least once or twice in the last month or so as a guy that I've liked because the price has been down. I feel like the line should be good enough to open up some holes. I kind of like him as a player when he's healthy, and he just hasn't come through for me. The Chiefs are not good against the run. 4.7 yards per carry allowed this season, 6 rushing scores. That seems like a good spot
right
for CJ Anderson. And if you're the Broncos, your game plan to not have Trevor Siemian ruin this game for you has to be to establish the run and to do well in that phase. Really limit the number of third and longs you get into. So I think they can take advantage of Kansas City and actually go ahead and have a productive game. Where I'm worried about CJ Anderson is stupid narrative stuff where Jamal Charles, you know, runs with a little more burst against his former team. Like he had such a great run there. It's probably not like the full betrayal style revenge game, but I'm sure it feels pretty bad to suffer devastating injuries, come back and have that team finally give up on you. So, you know, he'll probably have a little chip on his shoulder those first few carries. And do you see a path where if Charles gets hot in that game on Monday night, where Anderson's workload comes out smaller than we would typically expect?
I think if the Chiefs are winning, then perhaps, but other than that, no. I think Charles gets his. I think CJ gets his.
Okay, because that's the kind of matchup, though, that from an at-a-glance standpoint, I don't think people, when we think of weaker run defenses that teams have run well against, that's not one that comes to mind. And the other one that is surprising is Pittsburgh giving up 4.7 yards per carry as well.
Right.
You know, I don't ever think of Amir Abdullah as a player that I want to use, but is there some tournament appeal with Abdullah this week?
I think there might be. I'm wondering if he's going to use Theoretic a little more because they were talking about him a little bit earlier in the week. So I don't know, but I hear what you're saying. I think that matchup wise, that's an interesting one for Abdullah. Speaking of Detroit, does the Tate news scare you away from Marvin Jones at all?
I think the Golden Tate presence on the field could be good because it draws some attention from Joe Hayden potentially.
Yeah.
So the matchups could be a little more favorable for Jones if that happens. I would still, the hardest thing about that game is it being Sunday night and you know, you can't really pivot off of Marvin Jones or to Marvin Jones very easily that late in the day with late swap. So I'm probably staying away from a DFS standpoint. I'm trying to figure out what Pittsburgh's pass defense is really like. Are they going to be good, very good when it's all said and done this year? Where are they really going to grade out? I mean, so far, things have looked pretty strong for them. I think they're tied with Seattle for the best YPA allowed, 5.6 yards per attempt
right.
on really the season.
Mm-hmm.
Lions had an extra week to prepare, so maybe that offsets it a little bit. But the Steelers are shaping up to be really strong against the pass.
Yes, they absolutely are. My man, Jack Doyle, I'm all the way in with Jack Doyle. He's my what tight end? Let me. Where is he ranked? 10th. I think I got him 10th. Yep. I'm good with him. That guy, he's got 13 catches in the last 2 weeks. Why don't people like him?
Because his name's Jack Doyle. Because he plays for the Colts, probably.
Probably.
The main reason. No, he's getting plenty of work, and I think that could be garbage time central right there, where he's getting a lot of looks as they try to play catch up throughout the second half. I kind of like Tyler Kroft. I mean, I mentioned before that AJ Green is the elite receiver I'd like to pay up for. If for whatever reason I can't afford it and I don't want to go to the running game because I'm not sure about the Mixon, Bernard, Hill split, Tyler Kroft is cheap and tight end. It's not terrible this week, but because the Rudolph game is not part of the main slate, like Rudolph against the Browns would have been popular for me. The Kroft looks like one of the cheaper tight ends that I would actually use, since I think he's the next read for an Andy Dalton after AJ Green in the red zone.
I think that's fair. And he's been busy enough for his cost. He's been busy enough for everybody. All right. Listeners to our podcast get a free 10-day RotoWire trial, rotowire.com/pod. No credit card needed. That lets you check out nearly all the features on the site. Check it out now, rotowire.com/pod. So we've got Tim's Facebook Q&A on Sunday at noon Eastern. What else we got this weekend? Are you doing any radio?
No, I got Saturday off. Nice. So fortunately, I will be watching college football and, you know, doing random stuff around the house, getting ready for Sunday. Probably getting some food ready. I haven't had a big Sunday blowout food wise yet. It's been a weird year. Had a few Sundays where I've had to go out and do some things, and that kind of limited the pregame prep time. So maybe this will be the week where I finally get a big pot of chili going, because it's cool. It's cooling off here. It's like almost winter now. It changed quickly. So
are you beans or no beans?
I'll eat the beans and the chili. I don't mind. I mean, I do like Cincinnati chili though, and that's kind of a controversial take for some people because they think it's not chili at all. And I'll put as much stuff on there as, you know, I'm allowed to. I think the more the merrier with the ingredients.
I like the Cincinnati chili too. I don't know if it's chili, but it's a different take on it. But I grew up in New York and I'm a pizza snob, and you know, I like deep dish pizza. I just kind of go, I don't know if it's pizza, but I like it. It's more of, you know,
it's a casserole.
It's a casserole. Exactly.
It's the casserole that has pizzas. It's a pizza casserole. I'm not hating on it. The thing I don't like about the deep dish is it takes forever.
I've never made it.
No, I mean, just going out for it though. Like it cooks for a long time because it's such a huge pan and everything. So that's one deterrent right off the top. But the is it chili or is it okay to put ketchup on a hot dog? Like all the great food debates of Twitter from the last 10 years, I feel like I've been on the wrong side of all of them based on how the votes go.
Yeah.
And I think people do stupid things with food and I will criticize them for it. But at the end of the day, do what you want with your food. If you want to put ketchup on a hot dog, put ketchup on a hot dog.
Right.
So I do both. Whether you do it in Chicago or not, you know, that's your choice. But you don't need ketchup on a Chicago dog because there's like 100 things on there.
Right. What are there? Peppers and onions and all that stuff.
Yeah. Those sport peppers, those are good. And then the fluorescent relish that goes on. And of course you get the seeded bun, the mustard, the onions, all that stuff. And I think a pickle spear gets thrown in there.
That's a lot.
It's good stuff. It has like a completely different flavor profile than a hot dog you'd have at a cookout where you throw, you know, the usual condiments on there.
All right. Well, enjoy your football feast this weekend, whether it's dogs or chili or whatever. I don't think I'm going to have one this weekend. We got something to do Sunday. I got to do that too. Chili on, or, you know, cook meatballs for something like that. I don't know what. I got to figure this out. It's been same with me. Same with you. It's been a weird season that I haven't just, you know, fired something up and let it cook all day and let the house smell of it. I need to do that.
Do you have a smoker in your backyard?
I do have a green egg.
So, okay, you got that going. So if you could smoke a brisket or something back there.
I know. Maybe next week. Next week? Yeah, maybe next week. I got the green egg for Christmas last year. I haven't used it nearly enough. And I've done pork butts, but not a brisket. So
nice.
I got to do that. And I got to tell you, cooking a steak on that thing is the easiest thing in the history of the universe.
It comes out good pretty much every time.
Yeah, well, what happens is I was looking up how to do it because I've always had trouble. I like to cook. And the one thing I've always had trouble with is steaks because I can never tell if they're done. Like, it's just a thing that I've never quite figured out. And maybe I just haven't spent the time to do it. So I looked up how to do it when I got the green egg. And you get the green egg. I mean, the green egg acts as a smoker, or you can get it up to 700 degrees pretty easily. So I was watching some videos one day, and this guy was, got steaks. He said, all right, just get it up to 700, cook it on one side, turn it over, cook it on the other, then choke off the oxygen 4 more minutes and you're done. And it was a perfect medium rare. It was dummy proof.
That sounds pretty great.
I know. And I liked it. It was great. It was awesome. It was no think. And, 700 degrees, there you go. There's your sear. You can't get better than that.
So, well, once I take down a GPP or two, a big GPP or two, the big green egg will be high on the purchase list.
It's pretty cool. It was my gift for, I think, Christmas, birthday, Father's Day. It kind of stretched itself out quite a bit.
That's still pretty great, though. I'd rather have one big gift than 4 smaller ones.
Yes. And I don't use it enough, and I need to fix that. You can make pizza on it too, but I haven't done that. I have a pizza stone for it, and I haven't used it yet.
How you have the restraint to not just throw a large piece of meat on there on a weekly basis is beyond me.
Because there's a little bit of work involved. Now, I know there are people out there listening who have green eggs, and they're going, oh, it's not hard. And you're probably right. I just haven't, I haven't had enough reps with it yet. And what'll happen is I'll do a pork butt and I'll start at 5 in the morning and, and I'll lose temperature. The temperature will dip from, if I'm doing 225, then I'll go to 205. I'm like, why did this happen? And I find myself checking the thing all day. So it's a little bit, and I'm still a little intimidated by it, I have to confess. So,
well, I hope the next attempt next weekend goes well for you.
That sounds good. All right, everybody. That's enough food talk. We'll do a food podcast next week instead of football. Everybody, keep the reviews and ratings coming. We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening to this edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Our next episode is going to be Monday. Derek and I will check back in and recap all of Sunday's action. So come on and listen. For Derek Van Riper, I'm John Halpin. Good luck in week 8.